I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming home. Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday. I know my kingdom awaits, and they've forgiven my mistakes. I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming.
Welcome back to Coming Home Well. I'm Tyler Piron, and we are continuing with our series of getting great information from the Department of Veterans Services about some of the most difficult and challenging things that veterans face as they try to get the benefits that they've earned. We've talked to Sam a few times, but today we have Bill Libby. He's the legal liaison at the Virginia Department of Veterans Services. And you're like, what is a legal liaison? Well, they kind of help you with all the legal processes that you have to deal with the VA. They're not a lawyer for you to go sue the DOD or something. They're there to help you figure out all the legal challenges, because all these things are legal. They have to follow the law. So having somebody that knows how to follow the law is usually a good idea. So we're going to talk with Bill about a few things. We're going to talk about how to get benefits from the VA if you had something other than a fully honorable discharge. And that's different than getting it from the DOD. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, though that's a whole different ball of wax. So you think, oh, it's super easy. Well, we're going to see if that's super easy. I don't think it is, but we're going to get Bill, who's an expert. He's going to tell us all about it. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Yeah. Hi, Tyler. It's very nice to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Bill, I'm so concerned because veterans get a lot of misinformation when they're in the service. We call it barracks lawyers or sea lawyers if you're in the Navy. And they sort of tell people things that aren't always really the whole truth. So the most important thing that they don't tell people about the truth is if it's fully honorable, everything's copacetic, everything's fine. But if you get an other than honorable or a general discharge or a bad conduct or even a dishonorable, that plays a pretty significant role in the benefits you get, doesn't it?
Well, honorable and the general under honorable are not necessarily going to be big bars to benefits. Well, honorable, obviously not. But general is actually something that I've noticed a lot of veterans confused about is they get out with that general discharge and they actually think they need the discharge upgrade. Someone with a general discharge is already eligible for almost the complete portfolio of VA benefits sans the GI Bill. So that's a big area of misinformation, number one. Number two, I think it's important to recognize that sort of compare and contrast the way that the VA and the military view character of discharge. So on the military side, you sort of have like this sliding scale of how well did this person meet the personal and professional standards that they're held to. And you have your fully honorable and then your general going to OTH. You have some discharges that are only due to a court martial, like punitive discharges, your bad conduct, your dishonorable. The VA doesn't distinguish that significantly. To them, service is either honorable for VA purposes or it is dishonorable for VA purposes. And the criteria that they use to distinguish between those two is contained in 38 CFR 3.12. And that's actually a lot of what we're talking about when we talk about how the VA treats character of discharge. They're using those criteria to determine which veterans are or are not eligible to receive benefit payments.
And the CFR is the Code of Federal Regulations, which is 38 is everything that tells the VA what they have to do.
Correct. Yes.
So general is considered the same as honorable, except for education. Is that about right?
Okay. General discharge, you can file a disability claim. You can enroll in healthcare. You don't need to go out and get that formal paper correction from your branch of service to be able to do those things. And again, that's something that I've seen a great many veterans confused about, but it really is not a barrier.
So it's everything except the GI Bill.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so what about those less than fully discharged from the military? How are those a barrier to getting those disability benefits?
So that's where we start to get into those specific criteria of CFR 3.12, because CFR 3.12 basically has a set of enumerated circumstances under which VA must or should consider service dishonorable for VA purposes. And so that it's that overlap between what the military says and to what extent that maybe doesn't run afoul of one of those criteria. That's the area where veterans can argue that their discharge isn't a barrier to benefits. benefits. So for example, the two subparts of 3.12 that govern this most exclusively are really CFR 3.12 C and D. And there are statutory bars. Those are in section C. These are creations of Congress. They're written into the US code. They're generally going to be a little bit stricter. And then there are the regulatory bars for which VA has a little bit more discretion. You'll see that, when we get into this a little bit more, that some of those bars in D kind of have some wiggle room. There's definitions. For example, whether a discharge was due to willful and persistent misconduct is a really big thing that comes into play in section D. A veteran can argue that maybe my discharge was not due to willful and persistent misconduct. Perhaps you could say it's due to maybe symptoms of a service-connected mental health disorder, right? One of the things that I think is really critical to understand about this area is that whenever a veteran has a less than fully honorable discharge, that usually stems from one or more instances of misconduct that happened near the end of their service term. And understanding the circumstances that led up to that, as well as the circumstances under which the discharge was accepted, that really is the key. And again, comparing that to the criteria in CFR 3.12, that really is the key to figuring out one's eligibility for benefits in this type of situation.
So if somebody was having a lot of either military sexual trauma consequences or PTSD, you could argue, hey, I have PTSD and I wasn't really trying to be a bad soldier. It's because I was having these symptoms and they weren't being treated.
That's exactly right. And again, there are times where different bars sort of overlap with each other. So for example, probably the strictest bar that exists in CFR 3.12 is the general court-martial. So if your discharge was a punitive discharge due to a general court-martial, that's generally going to be a very strict bar to benefits. Now, I will also say, though, that CFR 3.12 draws a distinction because there are different types of court-martial. There are general court-martials and there are special court-martials. And I do not practice military law in this way. And so the way that I like to think of them is probably not completely correct, but I believe general is usually going to be more serious. If general is equivalent to a felony offense, then special is more like a misdemeanor.
Everything's a felony in the military. So it's kind of like that. But yeah, bad conduct, special or special is like a super Article 15. And mm-hmm. then a general court-martial means you probably killed somebody or raped somebody or did some other felony type of, no kidding, sold a lot of drugs. I was a special agent with the Criminal Investigative Agency, and we court-martialed a lot of people. And it's, you only get a court-martial if you either refuse the minor punishment or it's really serious.
And on that note, too, one of the other difficult ones is if the veteran accepted an other than honorable discharge in lieu of a court-martial. That's one of those regulatory bars under Section D that I mentioned earlier. By the way, one of the distinctions between Section C and Section D, I would really divorce this concept of character of discharge with service connection, because the VA can actually determine that a disability is service connected. The COD piece of this controls when and under which circumstances they can actually award benefits to that person. So the way that this review is initiated in the first place is because the veteran puts in their very first application for VA benefits. It can be a disability claim. It can be an application for healthcare. It can even be a certificate of eligibility for a VA home loan. You typically don't have to ask VA to engage in a COD. They're going to do it automatically as a part of reviewing that other application for benefits that you've put in. So what can happen in theory is you file a claim for PTSD and they say, okay, well, this is service connected, but you're still not eligible for any benefits because you fall under these bars in CFR 3.12. And the reason
that they normally do, just they look at it and go, oh, it's an other than honorable, and it stopped. Or do they like do a real investigation?
Well, it depends on how you initiate the COD. So the context in which I see it 9 times out of 10 is the veteran has filed a claim. They filed a specific disability compensation. I think PTSD is a bad example, to be honest with you, because that's one of those areas where you get into the mitigating circumstances. So instead, let's say it's a knee condition. They can say, okay, well, your character of discharge is a bar to benefits, but your knee is still service connected. And the difference between Section C and Section D is that if you have service that is dishonorable for VA purposes under one of the regulatory bars. So for example, willful and persistent misconduct or OTH in lieu of a court-martial, and you have a service-connected disorder, you are not going to receive VA disability payments for that, but you can get health care under Chapter 17 for any condition that VA views as service connected. Again, that does not open that full door to the VA health system to those people, but it does let them get healthcare for those specific conditions that the VA has deemed service connected.
But point, I hadn't thought of that. I had a soldier that was lost his leg, and he was also a big time drug dealer, lost his leg in combat, was convicted at court martial. And I always wondered, like, they don't just let him run off in the street without help in his leg.
And I need to stop you there, because if it was a general court martial, that's a statutory bar. That's one of those bars. What I'm
so talking he can't even get health care.
Not even that. Right.
Wow.
And that's why I say that's one of the strictest bars. The C bars in general are stricter. And that's one of the reasons why, is because even if you have a service connected disability, you don't even get health care for that if your service is dishonorable under one of those C bars.
Dishonorable, not just sort of dishonorable.
And that's also why it's so important, though. For example, let's say that you have the special court martial instead of the general. Emphasize that when the claim is filed, because the VA's instinct might be to look at that, see court martial, oh, that's going to be a bar. But if you clarify that distinction to them, then maybe you can sort of open the door to say, well, you should not find me dishonorable for VA purposes on these grounds. They may find that under different grounds, but at least it won't be that one that is the most disqualifying.
So we started with the concept that you have to put in some claim and the VA will characterize your discharge. Usually most people are honorable, but if you have something less than a fully honorable, they're going to take a look at it. And my bureaucratic instinct is that whatever the shortest, least resistance path of effort, it'll be, they'll be like, oh, it's less than honorable and it doesn't meet these criteria. Boom. So how would you go about trying to do this the smart way?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So when the VA initiates a character of discharge determination, and that's what these reviews are called, when they're sort of reviewing the facts and circumstances of a veteran's discharge in light of 3.12 to see if they're eligible for benefits or not, that is this character of discharge determination issue. So that is the first thing they're going to do before they even look at the rest of the claim. And the very first thing that the VA is going to do is they're going to send that veteran a letter saying, we are reviewing your discharge. You have 30 days basically to provide us with a statement of your perspective on what happened, essentially. And it is so important. I think it's better for veterans to include that with the application they file. And there are a couple of reasons why. Number one, when the VA sends that letter, it usually has a 30-day turnaround time. Not a lot of time if you're trying to put together something that's really coherent, especially candidly, the federal mail delays have been pretty bad. So especially right now, if there's only 30 days to respond to that, you might not get it until that window is done. But the other piece of this too is sort of step back and try and look at this discharge review process from the VA's perspective. If there are mitigating circumstances to a particular discharge, that is not something that is likely to be spelled out in that veteran's service record. The service record is going to show the misconduct. It's going to show what that person did wrong, right? Or maybe if that person was having a mental health breakdown behind the scenes, that's not going to be there. So the veteran's side of that story does not end up in that record unless they take affirmative steps to make it an issue. I also want to clarify something that I think is really important when you're talking about COD issues. So far, we've been talking about Section C and Section D, and they list these statutory and regulatory bars. But Section B has a very important distinction to it, which is that any of these bars in theory can be overcome if it's shown that the veteran was insane at the time of their offense. And I need to clarify insanity, because I think people hear that word and their mind automatically jumps to a particular place, like a criminal defense law and order style courtroom proceeding. But the definition of insanity is a lot looser than it's basically this idea that somebody acted differently or out of character than they normally would have because of some disease or defect. I think that can be read to include things like post-traumatic stress disorder, for example. But this is also part of why it's so important to understand these rules going into it. The VA typically is not going to read insanity into the record unless you raise that as an issue. They really prefer it to be directly claimed. It's like specifically saying this was due to that. I've seen them infer it in cases where there was a lot of information included with it, and it was about PTSD leading to misconduct. But even in the VA's own internal M21 manual, they really prefer for the veteran to specifically raise that, yes, I'm claiming that this was due to insanity.
And that's bureaucracy. You got to spell it out.
Exactly.
For
But that's part of why we're here today. There are little rules and tips and tricks, and there are ways that you can avail yourself of this process, but you kind of have to know what it is that you're trying to do. The other piece of this that I would clarify, by the way, is that COD is not a one and done thing. When the VA adjudicates a character of discharge determination, they're going to create this administrative decision in the veteran's file. That decision itself is actually not mailed to the veteran. The reasons and bases for it should be relayed to them through the end result of whatever other claim they filed that prompted the COD, but it can be appealed. You can file supplemental claims on it. You can challenge that if you feel like the VA might have gotten it wrong. And we do occasionally appeal things like that.
So how would they know? I mean, obviously they made a decision, but they don't send you a decision letter. It's really the result of whatever claim, the originating claim for a bad knee, for instance. Let's say you're not eligible because of your characteristic, the character of discharge.
Well, in theory, that's what it would be, is that ratings decision that you would normally get should paraphrase whatever the reasons and bases were for the COD as well. It'll say, we found your service dishonorable under these grounds. I will say, though, I haven't always seen that. And that's one of the reasons why veterans trying to navigate that process might be best served by connecting with an accredited representative, someone who can review that electronic record and actually read that admin decision and say, okay, this is why they did what they did, because it isn't necessarily a guarantee that they're going to know that otherwise.
And if I was a veteran, I had a other than fully honorable, but not dishonorable, because that means a specific thing, like you were court-martialed. That's the only way you get a dishonorable discharge. And it said it's dishonorable. I'd be freaking out going, no, they're totally wrong. And so that's a big difference between what the DOD and a court-martial gives it dishonorable and what the VA says is dishonorable service. And so that's probably a big punch in the gut for some people.
Just to be clear and make sure I understand, you're talking about dishonorable as a characterization on the DOD side versus when VA says that service is dishonorable for VA purposes?
Right.
Right. I can understand that for sure. And they really are different things. Someone can have an administrative discharge and still be deemed dishonorable for VA purposes, even though dishonorable is usually a punitive characterization on the DOD side.
Yeah, so they're totally different. The VA has these rules that you've talked about in 38 CFR. And it's either honorable or not honorable, and they call it dishonorable. And as opposed to the DOD, which has a bad conduct and administrative and dishonorable and BCD and all these other characterizations, the VA, it's either on or off. And so if you had something other than fully honorable, you're trying to get it back on, because it is a huge barrier to people getting the benefits that they've earned or could potentially receive with a not fully honorable discharge. And that can happen for a lot of reasons. So the first step is to file a claim for something, but really you were talking about going and getting that taken care of that first before you actually do the claim.
Remember, when the VA asks the veteran to contribute information, they don't give them that long to do it. And the type of narrative that you want to put together for this, it's probably not something that you want to be trying to cobble together on the fly because you've gotten that letter in the mail. By thinking about this before that first claim is filed, you sort of control the lens through which the VA will view it for the first time. Because remember, that is what this is typically, is it's the very first application for benefits, unless you're pursuing an old COD and trying to get that changed. But generally, it's going to be the VA's first look at you. So you want to kind of control the narrative. And to that end, there are a couple of specific bars, both statutory and regulatory, that I think people need to be aware of. The first is that general court-martial. Again, I think that is probably the strictest of them, just because, again, it's a statutory bar. There's not even healthcare for that. And then general court-martial, if that happened, there's usually, like you said, it can be assumed that something pretty significant happened during that veteran's term of service. Another one of those statutory bars, though, is for an AWOL. If the discharge was due to an AWOL that was greater than 180 continuous days, and that continuous word is important, right? However, there is an exception for that if the AWOL occurred under what's called compelling circumstances. And the definition of that, like some other things in this process, again, is a little bit looser than you might think. So for example, let's say somebody has a mental health breakdown and they just kind of go off the grid. The military discharges them due to that AWOL. And again, mind you, the military record is just going to show the AWOL. It's not going to show why you went AWOL. But maybe it's a mental health breakdown. Maybe your parents became grievously ill and you just needed to go home and care for them. It was a major family emergency, something like that. Including a narrative about that with the claim and just making that point, look, this occurred under compelling circumstances because this is what was going on with me. I have seen firsthand where VA is willing to kind of overlook something that would otherwise be a bar to benefits, that AWOL period, and they just sort of resolve the benefit of the doubt in their favor. And they say, okay, well, this veteran, they may have gone AWOL, but it was really maybe even because of the same claim that they're trying to file now. That's a really big one. So there
are
other-
provide some sort of proof.
In my experience, I think a good narrative can satisfy that. It also depends on what's being filed, to be honest with you. I think that a compelling circumstances argument that accompanies a claim for combat-related PTSD is probably going to be a little bit easier to just throw out there. I don't think there's a wrong amount of evidence to submit with this kind of thing. And I would say that if you're getting outside the scope of mental health disorders, it probably is. Well, I mean, really, it's always good to submit supporting evidence, but especially if you're talking about like a family emergency or something like that, you probably would want to submit something. But I will also say that I have personally seen it where just a well-written statement was enough to get them to do it too. So I've seen it both ways.
So they're adding context to the record that is not otherwise there so they can make a more informed decision.
Yeah. And Tyler, I think context is such an important word because, again, I've reviewed a lot of service records, and when the veteran does have that mitigating circumstance, it's not going to be there, and the VA is not going to see it unless it's specifically raised to them. And I think that the compelling circumstances exception is a really good example of where that can come into play and how having knowledge of what might otherwise be disqualifying can really help veterans and advocates as they navigate this process.
So if I'm somebody with a not a perfect record and I want to go to the VA and get benefits and I'm listening to this and I said, well, I didn't have a great characterization of discharge. It's not a dishonorable. I didn't get court-martialed. What would be my first step? Just a file, or do I reach out to the Department of Veterans Services and go, this is the story and this is what I want to try to do?
In general, this is stepping aside from character of discharge issues, I feel that ever since the Appeals Modernization Act was passed, it's probably in veterans' best interest to connect with accredited representatives. There are aspects of the VA system that became so much more bureaucratic than it was.
I believe.
I know. And I'm certainly not trying to disparage anyone, but it's true. It's like there are certain aspects of that where you don't want to go into it blind because depending on the options you select, there's evidence that can or can't be submitted. So I think connecting with an accredited representative is always a good idea, but especially if you might be going through one of these CODs, I think it's a really good idea because, like I said before, when they finish that determination, they're going to do that as an admin decision. It's not going to be mailed to you. And they should, in theory, share that language with you, but it doesn't always happen. And so having someone who has access to your VA record, we call it the Veterans Benefits Management System or VBMS, that's what we can see, that has the electronic file in it. Having access to a representative who can go there and actually see on the VA side what was done and why, I think is really important. I think you'd be remiss if you didn't do it.
And the Department of Veterans Services is absolutely free. I mean, we've been talking about this in a variety of shows about go get a VSO, somebody that knows what they're doing, so that you're not going and getting waylaid and then you can't even really appeal it because you've already appealed it several times and the matter is dead because they've already decided it several times. You didn't know what you're doing. And there's experts that are there that their entire job is to help you navigate these somewhat treacherous waters. And you've got nothing to lose because right now you're not getting anything. Might as well do it the right way. And so that's why we're talking to Bill Libby. He's the legal liaison at the Department of Veterans Services. And why we talked to Sam Cohen and so many of these other folks. Hey, there's our ways to get things done that aren't always the 100% easy way. We have barracks lawyers that will tell you all sorts of things. And Bill and I were talking about it a little bit ago about, hey, don't fight this discharge. You'll be able to upgrade it in 6 months to a year. Just send them a letter and they'll upgrade it and everything will be fine as they're trying to shoo you out the door. And that's not true because it's not an automatic process. How often do you see that, Bill, where people think, oh, well, it's really just an administrative minor thing to get their discharge upgraded with DOD or the VA?
We're talking about now the formal discharge upgrade process, which...
Or both.
I have to contrast the discharge upgrade process on the DOD end, though, because that is fundamentally a records correction. The VA is looking at these, what I would really say are exclusionary criteria in CFR 3.12. So if you can show that you don't meet any of those, then in theory, your service should be deemed honorable for VA purposes. It really depends on the exact circumstances of the discharge, but sometimes it's comparatively not that difficult to frame or describe that narrative in a way that doesn't run afoul of 3.12. By comparison, though, to get a discharge upgrade from DOD or from the branch of service, rather, you have to show, and I mean the veteran has to show, through clear and convincing evidence that their original discharge was either an error or an injustice. And the amount of proof that goes into that is very high, so much so that it's probably not something that someone wants to try and do by themselves. That's an area where attorneys are typically going to get involved. I think it's definitely in someone's best interest to be trying to connect with someone like that. Because the thing is, again, compare and contrast the VA and the military side of this, because the VA has this duty to assist, right? And the other piece of it is that for the most part, anything in the VA, you only have to prove it to that at least as likely as not standard. So said another way, on the VA side, everything is just at least as likely as not, and the VA will help you get there through the duty to assist. On the military side, it has to be clear and convincing evidence, and the military is not going to help you. They're not going to make any presumptions in your favor. There are some semi-favorable treatments that they'll give for mental health disorders. That's the closest thing to a duty to assist that you get in that discharge upgrade process. But by and large, there has to be a pretty strong case put together to demonstrate entitlement to that record correction in a way that isn't necessarily true of the VA, where it's more about that narrative and how that's presented to them, and whether you sort of give them enough information to conclude that, hey, this discharge does not run afoul of CFR 3.12.
So to put it another way, one is like probable cause, more likely than not, it's 51% likely in the veteran's favor. The other one is beyond a reasonable doubt, we screwed up and then we're going to upgrade it. Clearly, the beyond a reasonable doubt is much harder of a bar to reach, which is why we use it in criminal cases. We don't want to put innocent people in prison, but to get arrested, it's not a whole lot. It's it's likely you did that. Well, the VA has to do the probable cause, their duty to assist. And if everything's in equal basis, they have to lean towards the veteran to try to give them the benefits they earned. Is that about right?
That's the idea. I would point out that clear and convincing is usually another specific legal term of art. It's not quite as high as beyond a reasonable doubt, but it's close.
So we talked about the characterizations and how the VA are different than the services and how they've done it. And the fact that neither of them will have any compelling or even contextual information. They went AWOL to go help their mom who had cancer, and that's the reason they didn't return back from leave or whatever. Or they were having a mental health breakdown and they went and got help, or they went off in the woods for a year or two or whatever. There's nothing about that in the record. So they have nothing other than what the official record says, which is going to be really what the services say. And it's not going to have a lot of those mitigating circumstances. What would you prepare before you go talk to the VSO or after you talk to the VSO? What type of things do you want to compile to show that you were eligible for these things for whatever reason?
A good personal statement is probably the single most important thing that I think veterans can include with that initial application for benefits. Talking about the events that led up to that discharge. Why were they discharged the way that they were? What problems were they facing? Maybe they're some of the same problems that they're dealing with now. There's nowhere specifically that says this, but I think it makes it more compelling if the reason that the claim is being filed also has to do with the reasons for the discharge. Again, like a post-traumatic stress disorder, for example, maybe contributing to misconduct. And one of the areas where I think this is most important, going back into some of those specific bars that we see a lot. One of those regulatory D bars is for a discharge that was due to willful and persistent misconduct. And that is one of those areas where, like we've been saying, in the veteran's own record, they're not going to have mitigating circumstances. It's just going to be the misconduct. And if the veteran doesn't submit that kind of a strong personal narrative with their claim, it's a lot easier for VA to look at just the misconduct and say, that's willful and persistent. And then they just kind of move it aside. And when I see that bar being enacted, it's very often because the veteran didn't submit any evidence when they were asked to or with the initial claim itself. Doing that is so, so important because, again, their side of the story is not going to make it into that VA record unless they take steps to put it there.
The VA is, like any bureaucracy, going to go the path of least resistance. If you give them all the evidence and it meets the criteria, they're going to be like, yeah, we want to help this veteran.
Exactly. And that's been my experience too. If you give them a reason to deem that service honorable for VA purposes, they will do it. Again, the compelling circumstances argument, for example, when you submit a really cohesive narrative about what happened and why it should be considered compelling, they are absolutely willing to go with that. I don't think that VA does not want to deem service dishonorable for VA purposes. What they're doing is what CFR 3.12 instructs them to do. And that's why, again, the information that the veteran submits during this process can be so important, because you are giving VA that ammunition that they might need to deem your service honorable when otherwise they might be forced to say something else.
So they want to help you, but they have to follow the law, and you need to give them all the excuses to be able to follow the law, but also give you the benefits that you earned. Now, these are primarily health and things like that. What about disability? Is that also included?
Yes,
or is that
disability
just
compensation? And in fact, that is 9 times out of 10. That's the context that I see this in, is again, the veteran has filed a claim for disability compensation. And as a part of that adjudication, the VA has to look at whether their service is honorable or dishonorable for VA purposes. And then, of course, if it's honorable, then this is probably not a perfect comparison, but I think it's an easier way to think about it. I think that honorable for VA purposes kind of leads the VA to treat you as if you have a general discharge, but just for benefits eligibility purposes, because it can't restore access to the GI Bill, right? But only a veteran with a fully honorable discharge was going to get that in the first place. So again, that's part of why I think that a good enough comparison that it helps to explain it to people who may not be that familiar with the process. But yeah, you can get that disability compensation. You can enroll in VA healthcare. Really, the door to most VA benefits is going to open up for you as a result of that.
Because there are a number of discharges. There's other than honorable, there's medical separation, there's separation for the convenience of the government, there's entry-level separations. Yeah. What line are they drawing? I mean, obviously there's amount of service. You have to serve a certain amount of time. And sometimes if it's different, if you're in a war environment or not, or during times of war, if you're deployed, there's all these criteria that they have for each of the various things. But for healthcare, what is the bar? It's you got to be honorable for VA purposes and some amount of service. Is it 10 days, 30 days?
Yeah, no, it's generally just going to be, it's going to be honorable for VA purposes. And then any other length of service requirement that might apply is sort of its own thing. It doesn't change just because of the character of your discharge. But I mean, again, that honorable for VA purposes. And by the way, the criteria VA uses for this CFR 3.12, it's the same stuff, regardless of how you get into that COD process, whether you're filing a claim, whether you're applying for healthcare, or again, like the certificate of eligibility for a home loan, even. It's the same set of criteria they're looking at. It doesn't change.
So what are the biggest challenges that you come across when folks are trying to get that characterization of honorable service from the VA?
I think the biggest challenges we run into, it's probably the areas that I have a hard time with are definitely the court-martial based discharges, because even if, let's say it's a special court-martial as opposed to a general, that's still going to be some degree of misconduct. So one of the areas about CODs that can be a little bit tricky is that there are times where technically more than one bar could apply to someone. So you can have a court-martial, but maybe that also counts as willful and persistent misconduct. Again, AWOL is a similar thing, or maybe you have this AWOL, you could also color it as a willful and persistent misconduct thing. So I think the ones that are very challenging are the ones where you have to preempt multiple bars at the same time and be thinking ahead, like, okay, well, I can overcome this one, but then there's this other one in the background that could conceivably also apply. So I have to prepare my argument to preempt that. I would say the other challenging one is that insanity exception that I mentioned earlier, just because whereas in a lot of contexts, I do think that you can make that good narrative. I think insanity is a little bit harder without good medical support. Because if you're going to try and argue that you acted out of character due to some disease or defect, you're going to want to at least show that you have a diagnosis of the thing that is supposedly affecting your behavior. And one of the big challenges that we run into, if a veteran doesn't have access to good healthcare, which they probably don't if they're going through this process, they may not be able to get that kind of information very easily. So a lot of the challenges that we run into are actually challenges that our veterans are already facing just because they have this character of discharge that they do, and they don't have access to the benefits that might help them generate the sort of evidence that they would need to demonstrate eligibility for benefits. So
that's 22.
It's very circular in that sense. And again, that's a challenge that we run into in a lot of different contexts, not just the COD by any stretch of the imagination, but when medical evidence is required for that, and sometimes you really do need to support it with that kind of like a psychological assessment, for example. That's where things get really challenging, because the veteran probably doesn't have access to that, hence why they're in the situation coming to you for help in the first place.
And then, yeah, there's definitely a chicken and egg. How do I prove that I was acting out of character and not because I had PTSD when I can't get anybody any sort of treatment for PTSD because I'm not eligible for benefit?
And by the way, I will also say too that because of the VA's duty to assist, if it's a claim for a mental health disorder, it's possible. I wouldn't hang my hat on this, but it's possible that kind of evidence could be created during the life cycle of the claim itself. Maybe they send you for a VA exam, you get that diagnosis there. But again, I would not rely on that just because of the nuance of what you're really asking them to do. You're not just looking at whether, you're not even just looking at whether disability is service connected at that point. You're looking at a specific instance of misconduct. It's a much more granular analysis than just a sort of the generalized, is this service connected, yes or no?
So let me ask you this. I've heard this barracks lawyer that if you had multiple enlistments, you can just ignore the bad one at the end.
If a veteran has multiple periods of service, some of which ended honorably and some of which did not, you can still receive benefits for injuries incurred during that honorable period of service. So let's say a veteran has two periods of service, maybe during basic training, they fall and they hurt their knee, right? But then their second period of service ends with that general court-martial. You might still be able to get benefits for your knee because it happened during that period that's honorable. I will say, however, that this analysis gets a bit more complicated when the veteran had three or more continuous periods of service, because one of the things that VA will do is they will go by what was your enlistment obligation. And what I mean by that is, let's say the veteran signs up for a six-year term, but at year four, they decide to re-enlist, and then their misconduct happens in year five. That can sometimes actually taint both periods of service, if you sort of think about it, because it happened within the original obligation that you signed up for, but it also happened within this second obligation that you signed up for too. So that really,
that's again, that's a very legal and lawyerly answer.
And I've had to make these arguments before, and they are pretty involved. And that's an example of something that we might bring to the board, for example, as opposed to trying to deal with things at the regional office level, because it really does require you to engage in a pretty granular timeline of exactly what happened
when and what period of service and what was actually obligated and what was happening and when and where and all those things. So I'm just going to jump back a little bit about the characterization of getting it upgraded with the services and the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And they've changed the rules, because I know there's a bunch of people that had discharges that weren't great. I don't know what they actually were discharged, but I know that there is some upgrade process. So let's just talk about that upgrade process writ large, which is different than the VA.
And I want to say, too, that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, those discharges, VA recently issued some guidance. We're not sure exactly how it's going to play out. I have some ideas, and I'd be happy to share them with you as long as you don't take my word as gospel. But they're basically going to be reviewing CODs that were denied, and it was a Don't Ask, Don't Tell discharge. And what I suspect they're going to do is just go back and deem those discharges honorable for VA purposes, just as long as there isn't any other aggravating factor that might cause them to be ineligible under some other grounds. But, you know, a discharge upgrade, again, we're talking about the branch of service now. This is something that you petition from the very same branch that discharged you. You are really trying to show, and again, through clear and convincing evidence, that your discharge was either an error or an injustice. And my understanding, again, I have to caveat, the state does not represent veterans during the discharge upgrade process. So everything that I'm speaking about now, these are things that I learned through osmosis. The legal liaison is kind of like a pro bono coordinator. So when veterans come to us and they need help with areas outside of our expertise, I'm kind of like a clearinghouse to point them in the right direction towards someone maybe a bit better suited to assist. By far, discharge upgrades are the most common area of inquiry that I get. And that's part of why I know this. But the idea is that an error is essentially this idea that the military didn't follow its own laws. There was some procedure that was not followed that should have been. An injustice, on the other hand, I think is analogous in a sense to discrimination. It's almost like you were treated differently than someone else in that situation would have been, or in the sense that an injustice is just that, right? Like it's just wrong. And so when we talk about something like don't ask, don't tell, where there's a significant change in the law that comes along after the fact, and it kind of undermines the stated reason for those discharges, that's really what they're doing, is they're framing it in terms of that error or injustice analysis. It's like they're looking after the fact, they're saying, okay, well, we decided that this was wrong. These discharges need to be upgraded on equity or propriety grounds is also what they call it too. That's what they're really doing when they go through that analysis, is they're determining whether something is an error or an injustice. And again, in the case of a don't ask, don't tell discharge where the law was repealed at a later point in time, that's one of those areas where you are going to have like a pretty straightforward case for that.
Yeah, I was reading about the announcement from the VA where they said, okay, we're just going to do it in a blanket thing. If you're discharged for don't ask, don't tell with another than honorable, you're going to get all the benefits that you would have been otherwise entitled to just writ large. Of course, with every policy change, how it's implemented and how long it takes is sometimes the most frustrating part. You finally get the rules changed and then you have to wait for it to go out and people to understand how to apply it. So that's always a frustrating thing. But if you were in that bucket, the rules have changed. Go back to the VA. If you need to get it upgraded, definitely reach out to the Department of Veterans Services. They can at least, if they can help you, point you over to the people that can. Now, I understand why the Department of Veterans Services is not doing discharge upgrades, because that's a very specific thing. What do you do with most cases? Are there organizations that help with that, or private lawyers?
We have a couple of there are a few pro bono organizations in the state of Virginia that offer to assist with that kind of thing, or at least that will offer advice and counsel for it. And so basically we call it a Rolodex of different resources. And when I get referral, I just talk to them. And if there are any, sometimes different organizations prefer to represent different types of veterans. So I just say like, okay, well, I think that these people will be the best point of contact for you, or maybe this other group, or just again, I facilitate that warm handoff. I can't guarantee, mind you, that organization actually will represent the veteran. I don't have that level of authority over what they do. These are our partners and we value them very much, but we don't speak for them.
And they're pro bono. So they're doing for free.
And that's why I said before, like I tell veterans, think of me as a guidepost to point you in the right direction when you're running into something that is definitely outside of that area of VA benefits. And I've said before, this is that discharge upgrade really is. It is the practice of military law. Fundamentally, it's a great deal more involved. And I think in part because of that lack of a duty to assist, there is so much more, I think, energy that goes into a discharge upgrade application as opposed to just that COD on the VA end, where you can at least trust that they're going to request your service records and you're going to be given an opportunity to present things in your favor. You can request a hearing on the COD if you want to, often not really required to do that, but you can. So it really is just a completely different beast when you're trying to approach that on the DOD angle.
But it's really important to recognize that they are two separate entire things. You can, even with a not great discharge, you can go to the VA and ask them for help and possibly get all the benefits that you're entitled to if you had anything other than an honorable discharge. Even with all those things, you can go get the help in disability and healthcare. And it's a lot lower bar than it is to try to get your dishonorable or bad conduct discharge upgraded. And they're two entirely separate processes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for folks to realize, is that you can still go get help without having your official DD-214 being updated to some other discharge. And because of how the VA works, unless you're statutorily not allowed because of these rules, and there's a few of them, but other than that, they have a lot of leeway. So reach out to the Department of Veterans Services, Bill Libby, or any of his colleagues, or go file a claim, but really reach out to a VSO first if you don't have a really good discharge, especially if you anything other than honorable. You may have more problems. You may not have any problems at all, but it's better to coordinate with someone in advance because, hey, look, if I'm trying to write a letter to say that this thing isn't for real and there's all these mitigating circumstances and I say it, but I don't say it well and I don't use the right language, I'm just digging a hole. And now there's more evidence that, oh, I'm not really entitled to this because you've already given all these statements that, oh, now I have to say it differently or I didn't say it at all.
And again, you can challenge an unfavorable COD, but I definitely think it's easier to just get that honorable declaration on the front end, because again, that's the first time that VA is looking at your file, right? And if you can control the lens through which they look at that for the first time, you get to grab control of that narrative, and it makes it easier for them to do what you're asking them to do. Whereas if you go back and try and challenge it on the back end, they already have this existing decision, and then you also have to kind of overcome the reasons why that was wrong. Yeah.
But Bill, we covered a lot of ground. But before I let you go, I want to ask you one final question. What should I have asked you about but didn't? Or what is it you think everybody should know that I didn't really ask about?
It's a really good question. I really do think that we hit the essential elements of what we needed to cover today. What I would reiterate, though, is I think number one, a good personal statement is always important for a veteran with a less than fully honorable discharge. And number two, read CFR 3.12 before you write that statement or before you file your claim, because those are the criteria that you are looking at. And when you know that someone taking this kind of blind review of your file might otherwise be inclined to see one of those bars, take steps to make them view it some other way. Again, one of the big ones is that special versus general court-martial distinction. General court-martial, strict bar. Special court-martial, not necessarily so. So again, understanding what these disqualifiers are helps you to prepare your initial application in a way that circumvents them entirely. And I think that's so important, because the veterans that I see who have the most success with the COD process are typically the ones who do that. They're the ones who make that filing right the very first time. Step back, think about it. And again, just remember, think about that on the VA side too, and what they are looking at. That information that's in your service record isn't going to tell your side of the story. You really can't assume that they're going to see that unless you bring it to them. You know, the other thing I would say is that these COD bars, they're not always as strict as they might seem, but sometimes they are. A general court-martial is a very hard thing to overcome. That's an example of someone who might need to go get the discharge upgrade, unless you can make that insanity exception defense. But even that is pretty difficult if you're talking about a whole proceeding that was done as well. These court-martials, I know this, Tyler, but those don't happen for no reason, right? There's something pretty significant that's going on there. So that big area where I feel like there is good leeway to be had here is in those discharges that might otherwise be deemed dishonorable for that willful and persistent misconduct. Because if you can show that, again, it wasn't willful and persistent, I think most often it's because of a mental health disorder, that it preempts something that they might otherwise be inclined to do if they're only looking at what's in your record. But no, I think you asked great questions. I think that you covered this topic well. I mean, I think that whenever you're talking about discharge, it really is always dependent on that particular case, because we are talking about things that are very factually intensive. I don't think there's just one way to approach this. I think there are some general practice tips that will almost always help you, like the personal statement, for example. But it really just depends. And that's part of why I say it again, anyone who has concerns about this, I think they would be best served by connecting with an advocate, someone who can help them. We have 34 offices across the state. Our agents are happy to meet with you and discuss these issues. I certainly train on it whenever I get the chance to. So this is something we are aware of, and we'd be more than happy to help you navigate this.
And the price is right. It's absolutely free. That's the best part. So,
yeah, everything we do is absolutely free to the veteran.
And Virginia, like many states, we have a lot of folks that listen throughout the country. Every single state and Commonwealth has a veteran services. Some are better than others. We are very lucky here in the Commonwealth that our DVS is so involved. We have a very big military population, so that kind of helps. We're also right outside of DC, which helps too, because we have bases like everywhere. And that sort of helps, but they're there to help with all sorts of things. And there's wonderful programs. There's a lot of things here in the Commonwealth, but every state has these things. So if you're listening out in Minnesota or some other place, your Department of Veterans Services, if they don't offer it, they'll know who does. There's a lot of nonprofits. If you listen to the show, you hear all these different organizations. There's a lot of people that want to help veterans, even if your service may not have been perfect or there was some mitigation at the end. I mean, we hear stories all the time about people that were great soldiers. They deployed, they had a bunch of TBIs, and they started acting out. There was some minor misconduct, some alcohol, some other things, and they booted them for all these Article 15s, military sexual trauma is another one, where things happened and they didn't get treated. And the soldier went downhill and the unit is not aware of it. And especially in the 10, 15 years ago, especially at the beginning of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, we had no idea about these consequences. And so people got the boot. They got not great discharges. But these are the type of mitigations that you have to think about and have to explain. Bill, thank you so much for coming on the show and helping explain this. There's so much misinformation, poor information, barracks lawyers, sea lawyers. There's all sorts of things that people think they know, but they don't really know. And they tell them this and common knowledge that isn't common at all. And people get misconceptions. So we've been talking with Bill Libby. He's the legal liaison at the Virginia Department of Veterans Services. Bill, thank you so much for coming on Coming Home Well and sharing with us during this series that I think are going to be really helpful for a lot of veterans.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, folks, Tyler here at Coming Home Well. I wanted to give a big shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp, for sponsoring our podcast. As a veteran-related podcast, we cover a lot of sensitive topics and difficult issues that our military service members face when they return home from war. One of the biggest challenges vets often face is the isolation of today's culture. 9 out of 10 times, we prefer just to stay home. Maneuvering through all the chaos in today's society can be debilitating. So reaching out to someone who is qualified to help can be a starting point in moving forward. And that's why I'm proud to announce our connection with BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. BetterHelp.com is one of the leaders in online counseling and will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. So that's a great opportunity to talk to someone, and you don't even have to leave your own couch to go sit on someone else's. If you go to betterhelp.com/coming home well, you can be connected to a therapist in under 48 hours. If you're not comfortable talking over the phone, you could start by texting. They have video chat options, real-time options, and you can meet weekly at the discretion of the counselor. Now, this is not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online. It is someone who's trained in handling veterans' issues and can help you tackle that mountains of struggles together rather than alone. If you go to betterhelp.com/coming home well, you'll be automatically put in for a discount code of 10% off of your first month of therapy. If you don't see the 10% put on automatically, just put in the discount code coming home well, as this will also get your 10% off. If you're experiencing financial hardships, let them know. There is financial aid available in the form of an extra discount. Again, that is BetterHelp, HELP.com/coming home well, all one word. They are great at what they do, and what they do is help us veterans to come home well.
Thank you so much for joining us on Coming Home Well. Until all are home and all are well, this is Coming Home Well.